The Micro Effect.
www.themicroeffect.com.
You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
There was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switch and bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth, they pretend to guard the health of the people and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string. It makes its little puppets dance to every song he sings as the night falls in on a rising tide. Look beyond the shadows. Behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders.
Good morning.
But don't believe the lies.
It is now October 30th, and we have a very, very special program today. We're going to be a little bit technologically challenged because we are going to have so many people on this call that I'm doing the program via Skype right now, and I'm hoping that my Skype is working correctly. So anyway, we have today a program on President Trump's recovery and the role that the Federal Reserve will play either preserving or destroying that recovery. And I have a special guest on my show today. I've got Bob Fanning, and Bob is on the line, and he is ready to start the radio show. We also have Charles Ortel will be on the call, and Dr. William K. Black, and we are going to be talking about how the whole program fits together with the recovery and what the Federal Reserve policy is. And it's going to depend on the Federal Reserve whether or not this country continues to grow and to really do well under the Trump administration. And we need to expose that in a way that really supports what President Trump is trying to do. So with that, Bob, welcome to the show. You've been on a number of other times, and welcome to the show, and kind of tell our listeners what this whole program will be about.
Well, thank you for what I think is the 15th opportunity to speak for you, Dan, if we include Freedom Force International. And I really enjoy doing this show because you give the content enough time to be properly vetted. So thank you for that. And this show is about something that most people just don't grasp, and that's the Federal Reserve and their execution of monetary policy by buying and selling securities for their own account, thus adding to or subtracting from the money supply. The Federal Open Market Committee, when they purchase securities from the system, the money that pays for those securities comes out of the system. And it drains funds, and the normal course of events is that interest rates go up. Conversely, as we've had over the last 10 years after the crash of 08, the toxic securities that they bought up, putting money into the system, it had a name called quantitative easing, where money was put in the system basically to bail bankers out of their $13 trillion bet in 2008. Now they look to reverse quantitative easing, and they want to suck money out of the system by selling those toxic securities back into the system. And the act of selling, people have to send in their money to buy. And when they sell these toxic securities, that takes cash out of the system. So, here we have it in the United States, where just coincidentally we have an election. And just coincidentally, they announced the purchase of these securities, or the sale of these securities, the sale of these toxic securities about 6 months ago. And now we face a tightening and a publicly announced raising in interest rate. They announced to the public that they're only going to do it a little bit at a time, but they're going to continue to do it over and over as they sell about $700 billion worth of security in packages of $300 billion and $400 billion, which you can read about in the Financial Times in the last couple of days. So my concern is the velocity in which these securities are sold. If they're sold quickly, then interest rates will spike up, thus causing disruption in a fledgling recovery. This is just a brand new recovery that the poor, the voiceless, and the common man has patiently waited for decades, after tens of millions of people have lost their homes, the foreclosures are still going on, and Dr. Black estimated 14 million people lost their jobs. A lot of businesses failed, and the effects of the Greenspan put of 2008 are still to this day being felt by America. This was an experiment by the central bank, to put it politely. The experiment, in my view, was with premeditation and malice of forethought. Those are tall words. Premeditation came in 1997. When MERS, Mortgage Electronic Reporting System, and Nations Bank ran over to the patent office and patented their business plan, their secret business plan. They call them trade secrets, which I would love to see Mr. Trump go after the revocation of that patent. And basically all of the people who are being foreclosed on, who go to lawyers to get relief, to get help, put off the foreclosure, they find that they signed in their mortgage documents a place where they have been duped into giving the Mortgage Electronic and Reporting System, MERS, and Nations Bank the power of attorney to act in their behalf. Nobody who ever signed up for a mortgage in the past gave power of attorney to the lender. That creates a conflict of interest on behalf of the lender. So as further proof that this was malicious and a rigged trade, as Trump said, everything's rigged, we had Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan go into the Bank for International Settlements, where he was also on the board of directors, and he announced in the year 2000 that real estate would be given double collateral value. Thus, pumping up the value of America's real estate, thus turning our homes into ATMs, into cash stations, and thus getting people to flip their homes and buy bigger and do more real estate speculation. That was a government program announced at the Bank for International Settlements by the world's greatest thief. The greatest con man that ever lived was Alan Greenspan. And he spoke down to the American people, and he spoke as a con man. And when he would try and explain what he was up to, it was like talking to some kid on an acid trip. And he would use words that he thought would intimidate America. Well, the con man is out of business now. He's gone. And before he left, back in 1984, when Reagan was president, Greenspan and Stockman went to Social Security and they looted. They stole $2.8 trillion from Social Security and replaced what they stole with lockbox IOUs. So rather than let the Federal Reserve disrupt a fledgling recovery that had been waiting for Mr. Trump to come for 10 years, rather than disrupt that recovery by selling these toxic securities, why not put those 700 trillion billion dollars, $700 billion worth of securities into Social Security's custody and shore up Social Security instead of placating the banksters? Caused the problems in the first place. So, anyway, I hope Chairman Powell is on the line or listening.
We understand kind of what's been happening with this these toxic securities and how the Fed has been holding a number of them in really as collateral for all the taxpayer, all the money that's gone out and all the taxpayer money that's been bailing this out. Would you like to come in and talk about what you believe is the best approach, just like Bob did?
Sure. Thanks for including me, and I apologize for some of the background noise. I'm at a conference here at Bloomberg in New York. My view is that on December 31st, 2008, by December 31st, 2008, the world economic system entered purgatory. We were neither in heaven nor in hell when we made a decision to allow the central banks around the world to coordinate a ruinous project, lowering interest rates, lowering benchmark interest rates to the floor, or in Europe, into the basement, creating this obscene environment where those who had assets saw the value of their wealth soar, but where those who were engaged in investing projects couldn't make sense of the low rates of return that were offered. And so as a result, the system really stagnated. Instead of going through the kind of creative destruction that would have happened had nature been allowed to take its course, we entered this zombie land where in China they made a decision to put way too much money into capital projects that will never pay off in the main. Well, we didn't learn the lessons of what happens when there's too much supply and not enough demand. You've got to ration the supply back down. You've got to go through the process of taking down factories and maybe deciding that some cities, American cities, aren't going to come back the way they once were in let's say, the 50s, 60s, and 70s. You've got to make some painful decisions. And instead of doing that, we deferred the day of reckoning, and now it seems to be at hand. We're only starting to get interest rates back to a that makes sense. When you go back into the period of greatest growth in the United States of America in recent history, 82 to 98, roughly, to 1998, real interest rates were very high. That is to say, interest rates adjusted for a sensible calculation of inflation, you could put money in, quote, risk-free government debt, and you would actually make a real return. Nowadays, the inflation calculation, I would argue, is not properly done. So we don't really have a sense of what the true inflation rate is. If you take, for example, you want to make a transition from being a high school student into a productive member of society today, you got to find a way to pay for higher education, which has grown at rates of well above consumer price inflation for a long period of time. So we got to get back to a place where interest rates rise, and we've got to go through this period of rationalization, and there have to be winners and losers, and some of the people who have been speculating with borrowed money cleaned out, in my view. Now, unfortunately, one of the biggest speculators on the planet has been our central bank, the Fed, and other central banks around the world that have been buying equities. Shame on them for doing that. We're going to have to go through a period where those who have unencumbered capital participate actively, lead the world in the type of financial restructure which has been too long delayed ever since December 31st, 2008. So I do see a period of pain ahead for us. And today, some of our listeners know that I was the one who spotted trouble at General Electric back in 2007. Today we see what happens to a firm like General Electric that instead of dealing with its problems and issues, games the world until today when the stock is now down yet again 5% on yet again another disappointing earnings release. They have not addressed their structural problems, and they're sort of a test case for the rest of the wider world.
Well, Charles, your comments are extremely well taken. I agree. We've kicked the can down the road about as far as we could possibly kick it. And the taxpayer is ultimately the one that's on the hook for all this stuff. And we need to make sure that, the taxpayer gets a break for a change instead of the big banks and the big lenders. One of the concerns that I have is that if we let the interest rates go to the level that they really should be at, what happens with this enormous mountain of debt that the American taxpayers have on their back when those interest rates start going up and we have to start paying interest on that debt?
Well, so here's a good thing. In the midst of this mess, I like to say that the United States economy is the least dirty shirt in a dirty laundry. That there are countries in the world, a lot of the big countries in the world, have far more serious problems than we have. And so fortunately, we have, I think, can avail ourselves of a generational one-time shift. If we stay true to these policies that the Trump administration has tried to put through, some of them have been delayed, where regulations are cut and capital gains taxes are cut and the environment offered to long-term investors is a lot more welcoming, we could see at a time when China is now going to have to deal with its structural bubble, we could see many investors around the world concluding that, you know what, instead of making stuff, parts, let's say in Germany, and then shipping them out to China to then ship the final product back to Germany, instead of doing that, it's going to be making a lot more sense, I think, to reconfigure the ways in which products and services are configured to have them be made in a central location back inside the United States of America, where, after all, there is one language, one set of law, one long tradition. And we're going to suffer, I think, a lot less. If you think about Europe, many of the European nations still have negative interest rates, negative risk-free rates. Think of the pain they're going to suffer as interest rates rise around the world. Our pain, we're all going to have pain, but we will benefit from the structural shift. And when you think about, I don't particularly like Ross Perot, but he talks about that giant sucking sound. You think about what happened under NAFTA, how many manufacturing jobs were lost, and how many are going to come rushing back here. So on the one hand, yes, a portion of your costs will go up, the interest on your debt, but on the other hand, I think the multiplier effect of returning production back country, of getting exports humming, and of people around the world saying, you know, as bad as the United States is, a lot simpler to make stuff in Texas or maybe Wyoming, or you could pick a state, Idaho perhaps, a lot simpler to do what has been done in a crazy way, these complex logistical approaches through China, through India, et cetera. A lot simpler to do it all here in the largest integrated market in the world. And I think the net of all that will actually end up being very positive for the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would agree with that. And the thing that we have in the United States that we don't have in most of the rest of the world is a real capitalist culture that's based on freedom of choice and a system that isn't tied in with socialistic programs that have a tendency to hamstring any kind of a recovery. And we've got a lot of those programs in place where I believe that President Trump is trying to disassemble some of that. But the reality is we need to be continuing as a bastion of freedom. And the globalists are going to have to realize that their socialist plans absolutely do not work. They never have. They never will. And we need to get back to the business of being free, which the United States used to be very, very good at. Bob, I want you to weigh in on this because I know you feel the same way about socialism and exactly how it really does destroy free enterprise.
Well, that would be in the context of what Mr. Grider said in Secrets of the Temple on page 99, which is open in front of me. Mr. Grider's first book, or book before this, Secrets of the Temple, was Who Will Tell the People? And that was the book that was on the desk of all of the Ross Perot people who were fighting to get Mr. Perot into office back in 92. And going back into 91, 92, when I was a broker, an institutional bond and bond futures broker on the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade, I saw Mr. Greenspan, who I think was a greater enemy to America. Mr. Greenspan was America's bigger enemy than Kojo or Bin Laden. And I believe that he instituted monetary policies that were for the benefit of the financial economy rather than the economy in its entirety. We have been, when I met Charles in person in New York in 2014, we were concerned about 1.25 quadrillion in over-the-counter derivatives. And I'm still concerned about counterparty failure and a failure in that derivatives market. What we have undergone over the last decade is the carrying charges for that portfolio, that global book of derivatives, was zero. They got that zero interest rate policy, and basically the international swaps dealers, Jamie Dimon and Goldman Sachs, Government Sachs, they kept interest rates low. Well, who paid that freight? The savers of the world. The savers of the world were denied interest in order to carry this global derivatives book of 1.25 quadrillion. Now that the international swaps dealers realize that the party's older, Jamie Dimon wants to run for president to protect the derivatives book. What we have here is the savers of the world were zipped, screwed out of their returns so we could keep interest rates down, or that, so the Federal Reserve kept interest rates down on behalf of their buddies at the too big to fail banks and the International Swap Dealers Association. Now we have a pension crisis. The rule of 72 works in reverse too. If you deny the portfolio a fair return, and a fair return should be about 8%. 8 times 9 years is 72. So if you're getting 8%, that is what a pension should want. Now we have places like California and Illinois that are on the verge of default because of the monetary policies that were implemented for the benefit of the International Swaps Dealers Association. So what happened when people were getting just no return on their fixed income in their pensions? Well, they switched this to equities. They switched to stock. And now that the stock market has done well, they're going to raise interest rates and kill the stock market and create a pension, additional pension problems. So what we need here is for the Federal Reserve to start thinking about the fact that it works for the people, it works for the real economy, not the financial economy. The financial economy had their turn. It got bailed out. And now it's time for Main Street to get theirs and to be reimbursed for what was stolen from them. And we don't need to kill a recovery that's been waiting for 10 years to come by tinkering by central bankers. Now, Charles and I have a friend whose name is R. Christopher Whalen. Chris Whalen's father, Richard, walked into Jimmy Carter's office, and he didn't ask. He told Carter, "Mr. Carter, this gentleman here, this guy who's 6'9 with a cigar hanging out of his face, he's your new chairman of the Federal Reserve." And Paul Volcker had to come in and do some really extreme things to get the economy back to normal. And we have to do some real soul searching, starting at the Federal Reserve. And the reason I asked Dr. William Black to come on is to say one sentence, that the reason that we had the financial meltdown in 2008, the reason that 10 million people lost their homes, the reason that 14 million people lost their jobs, is because the Federal Reserve refused to enforce their own anti-fraud provisions. So, since they did not police themselves at the Federal Reserve, I'm sorry to say, Mr. Powell, we're going to do a mea culpa. We're going to apologize to the American economy, and we're going to address the situation with the toxic security in a way that spared all 300 million Americans, rather than just take care of the International Swap Dealers Association and the two big to fail banks who control the Federal Reserve.
Yeah. And Bob, I completely concur with what you just said, because in reality, the whole bailout in 2008 was designed to bail out the banks, certainly not the taxpayers. And as Charles said, it kicked the can down the road in a way that artificially kept the economy from having to deal with the realities of the real financial world. And now those realities are going to be coming home to roost. And it's time that we act like adults. And I think President Trump is trying to get the economy in such a solid position that it can handle some of the things that are coming down the road. Charles, what say you about that?
Well, so I think one thing that is useful to think about here when we talk about the economy is, are we scoring what we think is happening in the economic sector appropriately by concentrating on GDP, gross domestic product? My resounding answer to that question is hell no. That GDP is a number that is, you could go back to Simon Kuznets' original work in 1934 in his transmission to the Senate Finance Committee, and you'll see that GDP is basically a calculation rewards an increase in the size, scope, and spending of government. The real measure that I think is much more important to focus upon is the ratio of total debt and an economy, that is household, government, corporate, financial debt, divided by private sector wages and proprietors' income. That's a very important number. And what has happened in the period, particularly 45 to the present, is that the propensity of Americans and the Western world to borrow at every level of the economy has gone way up, and our private sector incomes and non-farm proprietors' incomes have not kept pace. So the only way to get, the least painful way to get to this debt crisis is to find a way to generate more private sector wages and non-farm proprietor incomes inside this country. That's what Donald Trump, I believe, is trying to do with these changes. He could go further. He could eliminate the war on hiring people, which has been put in place, I would argue, since 68, 69 with the Great Society. He could encourage people to hire other people as opposed to making it enormously expensive and dangerous to hire, particularly people age 50 and up. He can make that would basically look at places like Germany, look at places like China, look at places like Japan, and make it crystal clear that it's a lot more sensible to do whatever the companies based in Germany, Japan, and China are doing right here in the United States of America. That's the kind of stuff that we need to see happening. And short of that, short of making a structural set of changes in this economy, we're just going to be, we could end up like Japan. Now, 30 years later, Japan is still, the stock market is still 60% of what it was in 1989. You know, that's not something we need, we should be doing to the next generation here, locking ourselves in a, you know, in a circular firing squad where one side is shooting at the other, when we have this great opportunity at this moment in time, when there is, we are already, we may not want to admit it, in a global crisis, yet another global crisis, but we're nimble. We can get through this global crisis, and we can come out and actually increase the distance of our lead against places like China, which are today still ruled, as you were pointing out earlier, simply by socialists, but by a military government, one might argue, that doesn't exactly embrace diversity and activity inside its borders. So we have a real opportunity in this crisis. I hope we take it. I hope we have the courage and strength to make the structural changes that are needed. And I'm very heartened by the fact that President Trump has managed to get so many able people with experience in economic restructuring and the private sector to give up their money-making activity concluded to focus on making these structural changes, which are so important. Won't be easy to move this battleship, this aircraft carrier, or this fleet of aircraft carriers, but, you know, against stiff resistance so far, President Trump, I think, has made enormous progress. Let's hope he can continue to do so.
You're right, and one of the things that's always at the center of this, and it always has been, is the idea of free markets, of really the American system of capitalism as it used to be a century ago. Because the reality is all this regulation. I mean, we need some. There's no question about that. But all this regulation and all these programs that really hamstring free enterprise are what has hurt this economy worse than anything else. And we need to get back to thinking in terms of America, a free republic.
And Mr. Trump has declared war on regulations, which is a war on the deep state, the bureaucrats that run the deep state. America had to carry these bureaucrats for so long that a major portion of our national debt is funding bureaucracy. So Mr. Trump is trying to trim, as a good cost accountant would do, he's trying to trim these regulations in order to take the power away from bureaucrats. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to turn that one over to Charles, but I have to make the following comment, and that is, that's why the deep state hates Trump so bad, is because he is trimming the regulation, and he is pulling us away from this socialist one-world system that the whole financial sector has been steering us into. And believe me, if we have more freedom and more opportunity as individual people and as a, let's say, individual countries, to make good choices, we will do better than we will if a controlled economy worldwide. Charles, come on in.
Sure. So, actually, one thing I would say, one shading to those comments, is I believe what globalists are in favor of is certainly not one world controlled economy. They're in favor of unregulated globalism. And especially these large multinational companies, GE being an example, and there are others, they love a system where they can credibly say, you know, look, what law are we supposed to respect? We're in 140 different countries. You know, we can't, the laws of these countries conflict with one another. We can't possibly, you know, comply with all the laws. So, you know, we're going to pick and choose the laws that we want to follow. And there is no global regulator. There is no global taxing authority. Most of the actual regulators at government level don't have the staffs required to try to enter into a fair fight with a GE or an IBM or a Shell Oil or an Exxon, etc. So this idea that we should have unregulated globalism is a very, very bad idea. It was an idea that was propounded and really starting probably before 1988, but it became a reality 88, 89. We've been trying it for 30 years. I argue it's a 30 years war against working people, and I'm not in favor of socialism. I'm not in favor, of the left-leaning approach to government, big government. But what I have learned through my 62 years is that there are enough bad actors, enough fraudsters, and they operate in all sorts of guises. They can operate in religious garb. They can operate in academia. They certainly operate as politicians, lawyers, accountants, business people. You know, there are too many fraudsters. And this unregulated globalism has been a godsend to fraudsters, particularly presidents and former presidents. We can, without naming names, imagine a few of them. And the global system needs to see that these fraudsters, cannot have a, you know, long example of going from near bankrupt to now being worth hundreds of millions or billions of dollars and get away with that. Because if you allow that to keep happening, you're going to perpetuate a culture of fraud. You're going to, people, generation coming up is going to see this, and making money via fraud is a lot easier, perhaps, than playing by the rules. You can't let this example stand, and I'm hopeful that soon we will see these large global frauds will see the perpetrators of them brought to justice. That said, I think, you know, nations are tough to run. We're fortunate that we only have 325 million people in the United States of America. Think of the task of trying to bring India at 1.3 billion or China at almost 1.4 billion people into the world competition from an infrastructure that is far less, far more disadvantaged than America's. Think how much more difficult that is. Think how tough it is to run a family, let alone a, you know, a city, a state, a country. And now people are seriously thinking about Trump. Global government? That makes no sense. Certainly for the United States of America, 325 million people, we would be in a perpetual minority. There's 7.5 billion people on the planet. Why would we want to surrender control over the most valuable integrated market in the world, the most promising platform in the world, to a bunch of, you know, remote globalists who certainly don't have this interest at heart and look at this rich prize that exists in the country as something to be milked? Makes no sense whatsoever. And the people who have been advocating this position should be ashamed of themselves.
The people,
Charles, I can't imagine anybody putting it any better than that. You're absolutely right on the money, as usual. And it is. It's a gigantic international fraud to try to bring globalism into our country and tell us that we have to be underlings to a new global order that includes all these fascist, communist, socialist dictators and all these different groups around the world that have nothing but bad feelings for the United States. This is the dumbest thing we could ever do.
The practical solution to that problem is to get the Federal Reserve out of Washington, D.C., and out of the Georgetown cocktail circuit, where these know-it-all globalists show up and lobby the Federal Reserve. What's wrong with sticking the Federal Reserve in Kansas City, Missouri, and letting people like William K. Black seat in on the Federal Reserve activities in Kansas City in order to keep the globalists from lobbying and influencing our monetary policy? So that's my solution for this. And I also think that Mr. Trump ought to think about getting the anti-fraud regulator to come into the Oval Office once a quarter to find out what kind of scams the financial economy is trying to pull on America today. Go ahead.
Well, I, Bob, you're on right on point again, too. And so what we really need to do is we need to start to refocus on the people of this country and the average wage earners and get away from this idea that somehow there is a group of people, an elite group of people, who should control everyone else. And of course, financially, we saw what that happened in 2008, 2009. So that is really a key to this thing. Charles, your comments earlier about that we need to refocus on wage earners. We need to refocus on creating jobs in this country, and all these globalist plans to offshore all of our industries and take all of our, through tax incentives and everything else, take all of our industries to other countries so that we can share the wealth. We need to think of America first. Exactly what President Trump has been trying to do.
That's called
outsourcing. I could not agree more.
That's called outsourcing. We have seen all of the outsourcing we could possibly stand for the last 20 or 30 years. Let's create tax incentives to put Americans back to work. Let's have the rules in favor of the poor, the voiceless, and the common man, and make America great again. And that rings true to me, that we have to focus on our own country, and we should start focusing on our own country at the central bank level because that's where the deep state begins, is in the central bank. So get them out of the cocktail circuit in Washington, Georgetown, and get them back into the heartland of America, so where they can serve the people instead of serve the banks. Go ahead.
That's right. Charles, please, you join the conversation. Everything you've said has been really spot on.
Well, thank you for that. So one observation I would make, which is an interesting one, is that when you go into, there's something called the Bureau of Economic Analysis, National Income and Product Accounts. And it's really one of the very few pieces of the government, the federal government, that I think contributes enormously, or could contribute enormously, to our understanding of what actually has been happening since 1945. One of the tables, sets of tables that are particularly interesting, are the sets of tables that show you wages and total compensation, including benefits, by industry grouping, narrow industry grouping, and then the number of full-time equivalent employees working in each of those sectors. And what you see, without going into incredible minutia from the tables, is that the total compensation, once the total compensation of private sector workers gets to a certain level, nature takes over, and those workers, you know, are either outsourced or replaced by technology or whatever. There's not an inexorable rise up in the total compensation levels of any type of worker, actually. Even professional athletes taken as a broad grouping, because there are high-paid ones and unpaid ones. But in the public sector, in contrast, you can raise total compensation and still have more employees and still have more employees and still have more employees. One of the things that is breaking the back of the American economy has been the unfortunate decision to allow public sector unions to flourish. When we think about it, in the private sector, you know, it can make sense. I think unions are typically a sign of bad management, that, you know, that employers can't figure out that employees are the greatest resource of the company. You ought to tough to find good ones, it's tough to motivate them, it's tough to keep them. So when unions result, it's typically a sign of bad management. Why in the heck do the American people need to have a union hierarchy to protect us from ourselves? When you look at it right now, workers are among the most highly compensated. But not only that, there are many more of them typically than you would find in the private sector equivalent. Indeed, it's cheaper. As we're seeing, and I'm not in favor of private sector prisons, but it's cheaper in many parts of our gigantic government, where we spend $6 trillion per year now, counting federal, state, and local. It's a lot cheaper to use private sector employees. So what does that tell you? We have an opportunity to restructure, to disrupt the one sector of the American economy that has not yet been disrupted, and that's the government sector. We need to see a restructuring, because we cannot continue to allow, encourage state and local governments to go out and not only hire people and pay them more, but sign them up for deals in retirement that you cannot get today, generally speaking, in the private sector. We've got a lot of heavy lifting to do on that, and I'm hopeful that the Trump administration will be given an opportunity come the election next week to continue the path that we're on of trying to get this done right. Because if we don't get it right, done right soon, that lady who predicted massive bankruptcies, I forget her name now, Meredith Whitney, who made a prediction that there would be a bad prediction, as it turned out, in 2009 timeframe or 10, that we would see a spate of local and state government bankruptcies. If we don't get this done soon, she will be proven right, albeit maybe a decade late.
Yeah, no, and Charles, I think back, and it used to be that the only reason that people would take government jobs over private sector jobs was because of the so-called benefit package, but they were usually much lower monthly salary in the public sector jobs. That's completely turned on its head now, because if you look at public sector versus private sector, it's almost double by the time you add in their benefit packages, almost double the pay of private sector jobs. And you're right, That's unsustainable. If we want to talk about sustainability, that's unsustainable. And then on top of all the rest, we've got all these pension plans that Bob was referring to that are underfunded because of the rule of 72, where everything is you're dependent on 8% returns on investments, and we haven't had those in 10 years. And so many of these public sector pension funds are completely underfinanced and ready to really go bankrupt. So all of it's coming together at one time, and I think President Trump is smart enough to realize that we need to trim all the fat out of these public sector jobs.
We have to have leadership from government sector pensions. Everybody's going to have to take a haircut. My favorite writer on the pension crisis is Martin Armstrong. And we have government employees that are obsessed with making sure their pensions are nice and fat and juicy. We can't have a two-tiered system where the private sector pensions have to be written down and the government employees go unscathed. We have former government employees that are out collecting two and three pensions and Social Security. This isn't right. Go ahead.
You're right about that, Bob. As a matter of fact, I had an uncle who was a retired GS6. He was also a Navy Reserve commander, and he always bragged to me about how he was a triple dipper. Well, he was also a socialist, so I guess that all fit. But the fact is that we can't continue to do this. This is really insane. Charles, I want to get back to you because I know you're going to be on Bloomberg here shortly, and you have to leave us. But I want to make sure that you get a chance to say everything that you can about what you think the president needs to be doing with the economy to get this thing turned around.
Well, thanks so much. And yeah, I have to sign off in a few seconds here. But I've been working on a project that has been focused on getting the largest set of unprosecuted frauds ever attempted in the world disciplined, and that is the broadly defined array of Clinton Foundation charities and affiliates. And I'm at a stage now where I can tell you that November 15th, 2018 is a very important day. That's a day when, for the first time, the Clinton Foundation will have to file its tax returns and all the affiliates that report on a calendar year end. Have that day as a final deadline. It'll be the first time when there is a Trump-appointed IRS and an invigorated Justice Department that has been looking at this, and governments have been looking at this now for a lot of time. And I'm sanguine that we're going to see them brought to justice for perpetrating a fraud, which I estimate having all of its contours of being over $100 billion in size. What that will lead us to, I hope, is an exercise to bring regulation of charities into the 21st century. And by that I mean the intolerant, elite, endowed universities that are stifling freedom of it instead of encouraging it. There is an opportunity with this process to go and look carefully at whether these places that have $5 trillion in total assets, tax-free earning assets, whether these institutions are actually, whether they merit having a tax deduction anymore. This could lead or assist in a profound rebalancing of the tensions that animate globalist media, globalist academia, globalist multinationals. They all feed off this non-government operation that has not been regulated properly and that is creating wealth illegally for people. So there's a big opportunity here. There's a game-changing opportunity. Keep your eyes on what may happen on and after November 15, 2018. And let's hope that we forge a productive path forward here.
Charles, I have to say the more important date, just so that we can get to the November 15th date, is We need to get people out to vote and support this president on November 6th, because without a continuation of his policies moving forward, we are going to have a mess that's almost unimaginable.
Well, I agree, and thank you for letting me join this broadcast. I appreciate the opportunity. I wish you well, and I wish I could stay longer, but sadly I can't.
Charles, I have a question for you before you go. Charles, is it possible to claw back and force the Clintons and all the rest of these crooks to disgorge? Claw back and disgorge, is it possible?
It is absolutely possible, and the way to do it is to go against the donor, the Clintons themselves, but also the donors to these frauds. The way the laws are written, if a private foundation like the Gates Foundation contributes to an entity that it says is a valid charity but which isn't, then under the law, the IRS and various state and federal governments can go against, and foreign governments can go against the Gates Foundation to get the money. So absolutely, there's a clawback opportunity.
The only way to drain the swamp is to force them to claw it back and force them to disgorge.
That's a good way.
Let Mrs. Clinton be dead broke for sure.
With that, I'm going to sign off, and I wish you gentlemen all the best. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Charles, and we look forward to the next conversation.
Anytime. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, Bob, we've got a good conversation going here, and I know you've got lots. You and I talk for hours on end off the air about all these financial machinations that are going on. Do you see the changes in the derivatives market? Do you see any changes in the rules or anything that will bring back a semblance of normalcy to the markets?
Would it call your attention to Jamie Dimon's body language?
Bob, it sounds like we've got a commercial break coming. Think about that.
We'll pick it up
on the other side of the break.
Okay.
And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. But we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ.
Well, welcome back to the Dots with Dan Happel, and today we are talking about the Federal Reserve, and we are talking about what has been happening with the economy under the Trump administration, and how we see the need to protect President Trump's efforts to move our economy back on a stable platform, and he's been extremely successful at this. But it is so important that our listeners and everyone else get out and vote to support this president, because he is moving forward with a platform that promises to bring us back from the brink. And literally, we were on the brink, I believe, of losing our country to global socialism. And I'm just grateful that we have the opportunity to talk about these subjects on the air so that people can hear from people like Bob Fanning, from Charles Ortel. Still hopeful that Dr. Black will be joining us sometime in this broadcast, because he is one of the top fraud regulators and one of the people that was brought in on the Keating Five and the S&L crisis in 1980. To find out what happened with the meltdown of the banking system at the savings and loan level. So I'm hopeful that he can come talk with our listeners about that, because it's so important that we really understand just how deep the rabbit hole goes. Bob, you were starting on a thought about what we need to be doing to turn this ship around. Go ahead and follow up on what we were talking about.
Well, it can be summarized in one word, accountability. And the greatest accountability set of rules in America is the United States Constitution. And our Constitution makes provisions for all appropriations to be handled by the Congress. And we have the banksters, the fraudsters, who are being, they're conducting their business in secret. And Dr. Black is famous for saying that the reason that we had a financial collapse in 2008 is because the Federal Reserve refused to obey their own anti-fraud regulations. So we get an anti-fraud regulator in the Federal Reserve accountable to the President of the United States. That's a start. But Sun Tzu said in The Art of War that you have to cut off your enemy's supply lines. Well, the supply line I refer to that goes to the banksters is the printing press. They just have their way with the American economy by printing themselves whatever they want to bail themselves out of toxic securitizations or toxic derivatives. Let Mr. Trump and the Congress take control of the printing press and make sure that the American people are not being gypped while the banksters cut themselves huge bonuses for putting 10 million people out on the streets. Let's make sure that scams like MERS and Nations Banks, 10 years after the crash, still putting people out on the streets so the banks can clear the real estate market. They've been clearing the real estate market for a decade. I have lots of friends that are being foreclosed on and thrown out in the streets in their 60s. This is wrong. To work your entire life and then be made homeless so the bank can get a hold of your house because they ran out of bailout money. And now they're stealing real property. No, we have to stop these foreclosures. We really have to stop this. So Mr. Trump may want to do an executive order to study foreclosures, just like he did two executive orders two springs ago to study the trade deficit. Mm-hmm. And now we have policies that are being implemented to protect us from predatory economies like China. So I think accountability should be the takeaway on this. And first and foremost, I want the central bank and the banksters to be accountable to the American people in the halls of government. And I'm so happy that Mr. Tester in Montana is facing a possible unseating at the Senate Banking Committee because he would be the example. He gave the banksters $13 trillion in bailout money, which they promptly bonused themselves big money for destroying the economy. But Mr. Tester did not bring home a dime to Montana to bail out Main Street, who was hurt. At what point do we have accountability and especially go after the orchestrators of the crash of 2008, beginning with, but not limited to, Alan Greenspan, who orchestrated the pump and dump that Goldman Sachs so gleefully took advantage of and dumped all these toxic securitizations into the world's central banks and institutional investors. The toxic securitizations also had targeted derivatives. They knew exactly what tranches in these securitizations were going to fail. The credit default swaps were targeted, and specific accounts swapped at the trough of government bailouts. And we have to reverse engineer the crash of 2008, punish the guilty ones, and set regulations in place to where it never happens again. Is that about it, Dan?
Yeah, well, and with that, Bob, I have to explain to our listeners in you know, really easy terms what the derivatives market is. And it's basically a big casino where bankers and national investors can bet on the credit worthiness or the future of particular investments. And they bet on these things. They literally multiply the damage that can be done if their bets don't work out in exponential ways. And right now, that derivatives market, you pegged it at $1.25 quadrillion. I mean, it is the not only 800-pound gorilla, but probably 8,000-pound gorilla in the room, is the fact that that market has gone completely unregulated and has continued to grow and bloom over the last almost 20 years.
Well, let me correct you. Derivatives is not an oogie-boogie bad word. The listed derivatives markets is where I'm from, futures and options. The unlisted OTC derivatives market is what you refer to as
right. The
1.25 quadrillion.
Right.
So,
yeah, I'm not talking
real,
about
the real hedges.
I'm not
the real
about
hedges,
grain,
the real hedges of the world
commodities.
Are necessary. The real hedges of the world are necessary. They're on exchanges. They're regulated. They're watched like a hawk. The unregulated derivatives, the OTC derivatives that FTC Chairwoman Brooks Lee Bourne wanted to deregulate. And she was stiffed by the 106th Congress, and it was the 106th Congress that was captured. Those regulators were captured. They're probably paid off, bribed. The regulatory capture is followed by regulatory arbitrage, and then there is regulatory takings of your property in violation of the Fifth Amendment. We have to stop the crooks that Charles was referring to from capturing our regulators and using these instruments, these over-the-counter instruments that Jamie Dimon is so obsessed with protecting on behalf of the international swaps dealers. And we have to put them in a very transparent way in front of the Congress and the Senate to make sure that they aren't setting us up for another rigged trade. 2008 was a rigged trade. It started. They started rigging it in 1997. Greenspan set it into motion at the Bank for International Settlements in 2000. That can be read about if you Google in the Der Spiegel magazine. Just put in their search engine William White. William White was the chief economist for the Bank for International Settlements, and he went to Jackson Hole, Wyoming in 2003 and said what Greenspan had proposed to the Bank for International Settlements is systematically a bad idea, and William White was proven correct. So accountability, prosecution, and force these people to disgorge their ill-gotten gains, especially the elite, who were able to have numbered accounts in places like BNP Paribas in France, which got $145 million shipped over to that institution. Adnan Aki, who is the major shareholder of BNP Paribas, got $145 million shipped over to his bank. And who is Aki? He was Saddam Hussein's arms dealer. He's also pals with Tony Resco, who's also pals with Barack Obama. So this is the people who perpetrated all of these things on the American public. If Mr. Trump wants to drain the swamp, he's got to prosecute these people, especially the people who are trying to conduct an insurrection against a duly elected government. And, you know, the likes of Soros, Obama, and Clinton, they know they're going to hang. That's why you've got 5,000 troops at the border to protect us, because they're orchestrating an insurrection with this invasion from Central America. And these invaders, they have a destination. That destination is 326 Indian reservations, where they're going to go hide ISIS, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, and MS-13. We have to make sure that that bait of a destination is taken away by repealing the Hart Act.
Bob, I'm gonna get back on focus here, because in reality we're getting into so many subjects, and it's going to take us 5 hours to talk about all these other subjects. But what I want to focus on is the and believe me, you're talking about great things. We need to do different shows so that we can focus on each and every one of these issues. But right now I want to concentrate on just the fact that unregulated derivatives, and you're absolutely right, there is a difference there. I know commodity brokers who, because of the derivatives that are regulated, it really controls the excesses and the huge bounces in the commodities markets that would occur if we did not have those regulated derivatives. So we got that. What we're looking at now is such a huge potential liability that, and I want our listeners to understand one thing. You mentioned the $13 trillion that got sent out by the Federal Reserve System to banks all over the world. I think our listeners may not realize that at $853 billion bailout that was approved by the Senate, which incidentally is not legal, it's supposed to go through the House, but it was approved by the Senate, was only the tip of the iceberg. Actually, once they got that, they went through that so fast it wasn't even funny. They had to bail out a bunch of additional banks internationally because of this huge derivatives, unregulated derivatives bubble that was out there. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it started with Hank Paulson on his knee begging Nancy Pelosi for $787 billion in order to pay off These securitizations and derivatives, over-the-counter derivatives, and the precedent was set. And Goldman Sachs was certain that even though they put all of this stuff out there, they didn't know where it was going to get paid who was going to pay it, but they knew that they had captured the regulators, Pelosi, and that even if there was no money set aside to pay these credit default swaps off that were written at AIG and Citibank, they knew that the taxpayer would back all of this because they had captured the regulators. And so what we have to do is make sure that never happens again, that there is never another backstop at the printing press where Too Big to Fail banks and the International Swap Dealers Association is able to pay themselves out of the treasury with the printing press that they have captured. So I'd like to see the printing press get recaptured back into the Congress and the Senate and the executive branch and all appropriations to take place as provided for in the Constitution rather than the old boys club that meets at the Federal Reserve and the International Swap Dealers Association. So Jamie Dimon, one of the major financial engineers that put this stuff out with J.P. Morgan, he wants to run for president in 2020. And Mr. Trump's response to that is, let him try. He's scared. He should be scared. Jamie Dimon was one of the major orchestrators of the crash of 2008. Because they knew that they would get paid. Ultimately, right. their toxic instruments would get picked up by the taxpayer. That can't happen again. They can't have that confidence.
Yeah, I agree, Bob. And the thing is, you're right. We need to get that's another issue altogether. But we need to get the financial sector, we need to get the monetary system of the United States back in the hands of Congress as articulated in the U.S. Constitution. We need to get back to sound money, and that's an important aspect that cannot happen as long as a group of people control a printing press that they can print as much as they want of something that they loan to us at interest and then capture all the interest themselves so that all the liability is on the taxpayers.
True. And it's in one word, it's accountability. And Mr. Trump has to hold them accountable. Mr. Trump has to be a leader. He has to be a leadership. He has to institute his leadership in taking back the printing press and overseeing the regulators, because the regulators are not doing a good job policing themselves, as evidenced by 2008, as evidenced by the fact that they stole $2.8 trillion out of Social Security, as evidenced by the fact that they want to liquidate toxic securities that were purchased with taxpayer money. The banks didn't earn any money to buy these securities. They use the printing press to buy the securities. Now they're going to take the same securities that they bought and use them as a weapon against Trump's recovery. There's a huge disconnect here.
Yeah, there is a huge disconnect. And the problem that we have with this whole idea, Bob, is the fact that the Federal Reserve has far and away too much control over our entire world financial system. I mean, they're the center of the whole thing. And now we have a group of internationalists that want to take away the power the United States has through the reserve currency role and throw that into an international monetary system that is based again on debt and totally digital, that literally takes away everyone on the planet's ability to control their own financial well-being, because if we get into digital world currency, all the bad people are going to be controlling it and none of the good people will.
Exactly right. And you know, we have just like Chinese communists have minders when you go visit China, Wall Street has a minder who sits right next to President Trump. His name is Mnuchin. The International Swap Dealers Association, the too big to fail banks, they all have Mr. Trump's ear, and I like guys like Charles Ortel, R. Christopher Whalen, and Dr. William Black to have access to the president. Thank God we have Larry Kudlow as the chairman of the economic advisors. Larry Kudlow used to work for me as my preferred stock trader in 1975 at Paine Webber. He's scary smart. He's got loads of common sense, and I'm glad that Kudlow is there as a tempering influence to make sure that the international swap dealers, the too big to fail banks, and Wall Street in general, do not have the exclusive ear of the president. Kudlow is a good guy, very good guy. I hope to have him on this show one day.
Well, and I know you had mentioned, and we're hopeful that Mr. Kudlow and others are monitoring this radio show. I know that they're also Rand Paul is potentially going to be listening and calling in later in the program, because he is up in Montana in our home turf campaigning, and we asked that he then on the radio show so that he could comment on this. His father, Ron Paul, obviously is probably the smartest guy on federal monetary policy that I can think of, and you know, he is the father of End the Fed.
Dr. Paul is up here at the request of the president. The president's been here four or five times because this Senate seat is so important to get it as a Republican vote. But I represent to your audience, all 300 million Americans out there, that they all have a vested interest in Rosendale winning over Tester, because we need to get Tester off the Senate Banking Committee. And if Tester wins, it's because the too big to fail banks and Wall Street bought him the seat. For no other reason will he win, other than the TV ads, etc., have inundated the state of Montana. So I'm not particularly fond of Rosendale, but if we can get Tester off the Senate Banking Committee, it'll be one of the greatest victories of the Trump administration. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. Well, and I don't know if our listeners are aware, but John Tester is the number one collector of lobbying cash, and one of the biggest cash lobbying organizations is the banking system, and he has collected a huge amount of money on behalf of his representation on the banking committee, on the Senate Banking Committee, and also on pharmaceuticals. I have to say, pharmaceuticals are the number one contributor to campaign cash nationally, and John Tester's been a huge recipient of pharmaceutical cash, and it's interesting to me that they really try to make Matt Rosendale look like he's the guy that's collected all this all this cash from the pharmaceutical companies, and in reality it pales the amount he's collected in comparison to what John Tester has collected.
Now, Rosendale's a finance guy. He's the state auditor, and he's the insurance commissioner. He understands this sort of conversation. Tester's a wheat farmer, and it makes no sense whatsoever to be feeding John Tester $100 lobsters at the POM when he doesn't even know what he's doing on the Senate Banking Committee. He has no clue. He's been there a decade. We had a crash that's 10 years old, and Tester didn't bring a dime back to Main Street, but he did dole out $13 trillion so banksters could bonus themselves appalling amounts of money for destroying.
Yeah. Bob, I hear commercial break coming up. Let's pick it up on the other side of the break.
And we are, as a people, inherently and historically, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. But we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ of independence from the Brits. It was revolution. Now an enemy from within would enslave us all again and deprive us of a rising constitution.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel, and today we are talking about the Federal Reserve System, and we are talking about the Trump economic recovery. We have seen such a change in our country in the last year. It took a while to get it off the ground, but we have seen such a change in our economy, and we're seeing industries and people move back into the United States, bringing capital back to the United States and doing things here that have been not happening under the two previous administrations. We need to see this continue because, quite frankly, we need that economic recovery to happen because we've got a lot of problems structurally in the world economy, and the only way that that will do better and survive is with the United States at the helm as a free constitutional Republican system of government operating under capitalism that is good capitalism, not unlimited crazy capitalism, but the kind of capitalism that really made this country grow. Bob, you were referring to the changes in the economy and how really accountability is what is needed to bring this country back. Let's continue on that vein and let's talk about why accountability of all these different groups and organizations is so essential.
Well, the accountability should be in the hands of the people. The people's president is Donald Trump, no question about that. He is elected as one of the greatest populists in America's history. But I wanted to, just the way the founders wanted it in when they created a republic. And the republic all meets in the Congress. And what is wrong with Jay Powell going into Congress, maybe even a combined session, and answering their questions as to why he wants to raise interest rates and sell these toxic securities into the marketplace? Let's have some rationale. Rather than Mario Draghi's embracing some obscure calculus and mesmerizing Congress with statistics. Let's find out what they're doing with the printing press every day. Let's find out who's involved in frauds, what frauds are underway, and let's find out who's being prosecuted for the crimes of the past. And let's start with Alan Greenspan and George Soros. Let's bring the full faith and credit of the United States of America back to where it was, rather than everybody thinking that it's a pay-to-play, rigged economy for the crony capitalists who pay for access by bribing public officials. Let's stop that. Let's take the public officials who do accept bribes from places like the International Swaps Dealers Association or the Too Big to Fail Banks or Wall Street. Well, let's prosecute these people. And, you know, Abe Lincoln set a great example when he hung them a dozen at a pop. Let's get an HBO show where the financial criminals of the past decade drop through the trap door at the same time. Let's make sure that those who are conducting the invasion, the insurrection that is being foisted upon us by Soros, let's see those people drop through the trapdoor on HBO. I know I would pay to watch the show. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I think I would too, Bob. And you allude to this, and this is absolutely right. One of the biggest problems in our country right now is all the cash that goes from lobbying groups and lobbyists to politicians. That needs to end. The kind of money that some of these people have collected, and you rightly point to people like Nancy Pelosi, who have become incredible millionaires many, many, many times over as a result of their being involved in the political decision-making of this country.
Dianne Feinstein, who orchestrated the destruction of Kavanaugh, she and her husband have taken millions from the Chinese communists. Well, I'd like to see Feinstein drop through the trap door. She's a crook. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, and certainly, I mean, that's happened literally all of them are dirty with lobbying cash that's become so much a part of the swamp. And I really appreciate the fact that President Trump ran for the presidency because he didn't need the cash. He's got more cash than he knows what to do with. He didn't need the money. He did it for the reasons that he loves his country. And that is an absolutely amazing thing. You look at the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation, and they literally couldn't spend all the money that they've collected, since he was president through all these, through this tax exempt foundation. They literally could burn cash to light cigars, and they couldn't go through the money if they had to.
That's right. Charles used a number like $150 billion. That's a lot of money. And it basically, as the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton was out being an arms broker. She sold the arms to ISIS, who Obama created. She sold the arms to ISIS, and ISIS committed a genocide of 250,000 Christians. So she is an accomplice to genocide. What a drop through the trap door. Not for financial crimes, but for murder.
Well, and I just think of, you know, all the things that have happened in the last 20 years of our government, the things that have happened as a result of, you know, this kind of bribery and this kind of open collusion with our enemies. And it's just, it's tragic. It's sad. And incidentally, you know, I know one of the things that Charles was talking about is the Russian connection to the Clinton Foundation and how Uranium One, how they collected a huge sum of money through a Canadian firm that was backed by Russian finances to basically turn over 20% of United States uranium to a Russian-controlled company, and it happened under the Clinton State Department and approved without proper oversight under the Clinton Department. That couldn't have happened in an honest and a accountable type of government. It just couldn't happen.
One of the people who have made Mr. Clinton's or Mr. Trump's life miserable is Comey, James Comey, the head of the FBI. Mr. Comey receives, before anybody else, all of the metadata that comes out of Salt Lake City, as the National Security Administration's supercomputer in Salt Lake City. Once you have the metadata, then you can set up derivatives trade, because you then also have the intelligence to understand the mega movements of the society. Then you capture the regulators, you set up the regulatory arbitrage, and then the regulatory takings. If I was sitting next to Mr. Trump, I would order an investigation as to whether Comey gave this metadata to George Soros, who then placed leveraged trades in order to fleece the American public and pay for things like this invasion. And so Comey and metadata and Soros, connect those three dots, and the president ought to order an investigation. And the worst case scenario, if Mr. Trump doesn't accomplish anything more, is he'll get Soros and Comey to start to behave themselves, because they can drop through the trapdoor on that one alone. Go ahead, Deb.
Yeah, well, Bob, I want to make sure that we talk to the president here, and we're addressing the president when we say it is imperative that the Federal Reserve be doing the right things for the American people and be doing what is good for our recovery and our economy. I know you and I both are not big fans of the Federal Reserve system, because we recognize that it's based on debt and fraud, but at the same time, they can help this president by maintaining and making sure that the economic recovery continues under his tutelage. What we do to make sure that that happens, and how can we help the president in making that happen?
At the University of Notre Dame, there is the Fanning Center for Business Communication, founded by my Uncle Gene. Uncle Gene took me, his nephew and his godson, to the side, and he said, the secret to communication is communicate, communicate, communicate. So what I would ask Mr. Trump to do is bring Mr. J. Powell into the Oval Office, ask him who the anti-fraud regulator is, because we have no choice but to assume there's more fraud, and have Mr. Trump bring the chairman of the Federal Reserve into the Oval Office, ask about fraud, and then ask about the printing press, and how's it being abused by the financial economy, and how is it the printing press being used to spur on the economy 10 years after the crash? This is absurd that we're begging for recovery, that we're begging to protect recovery 10 years after they've stolen everybody's home equity, then stolen the returns off of their pensions, and now they're trashing the stock market by bringing interest rates up. We just don't get a break. Mr. Trump, it's his job to see to it that we get a break. And it's also the public's job to educate themselves. I'm not asking everybody to read Secrets of the Temple by William Gregor. What I am asking everybody to watch Steve Bannon's movie, Generation Zero. I'm asking everybody to watch The Big Short. Understand that when the crash happened in 2008, in The Big Short, they laugh about it. But for every 1% the unemployment rate went up after the crash, 40,000 people died. So these banksters who abuse their power, abuse the printing press, these are genocidal maniacs. There are genocidal maniacs at the Federal Reserve, and the number one genocidal maniac in the world is Alan Greenspan. I hope that answered your question.
Well, Bob, what I want you to do, too, is explain what you mean by every 1% increase in the unemployment resulted in 40,000 deaths. Kind of explain that to our listeners.
Because this is macro. This is macroeconomics. And when you take people with heart disease and all the other stress-related diseases, most men in America die from stress-related disease. If you take their home equity, their job, and then give them 0% returns for a decade in their pensions, that stress kills people. And no, they didn't march out and put a gun to the side of their head. They just injected so much stress into the system, into the, as Charles just said, a war on the middle class. Well, there are people that die in war, and it was quantified in The Big Short at 40,000 people per 1% increase in unemployment. Well, I didn't make this stuff up. This is what the people who wrote the movie and researched their screenplay wanted to do. The Big Short is more important today than it's ever been because the financial collapse is still the 800-pound gorilla in the living room, and it's never gone away.
Right, right. And that's one thing, Bob, that should have happened as a result because, frankly, the unregulated derivatives, the bad investments in liar loans and so forth were really the primary cause of the 2008 collapse. And yet that area of our economy was not regulated in any way. As a matter of fact, right now it hasn't changed a bit, only it's just gotten larger. Am I right about that?
You're absolutely correct, and if your listeners want to do their own homework, there's a book written by Gretchen Mortensen from the New York Times called Reckless Endangerment. And what happened, in answer to what you just brought up, was the Community Reinvestment Act. And that was where Johnson from Fannie Mae captured Bill Clinton, and in order to blow up Fannie Mae's balance sheet, so Johnson would make big money on his Fannie Mae stock and options, in order to blow up their balance sheet, they began the Community Reinvestment Act. One of the banks that reaped huge benefits from the Community Reinvestment Act was the Shore Bank on the south side of Chicago. That's Barack Obama's bank. And so the financial collapse was from capturing the regulators. Johnson did it from Fannie Mae. And then what they did is they transferred everybody's home equity out of the system with a rigged trade called the Greenspan Put. So I want your listeners to educate themselves on this, because this is crony capitalism at its absolute worst. And these are the sociopaths who have our printing press. And they don't care if 40,000 people die. They care if their derivatives or their toxic securitizations pay off. They care if they are able to sell toxic securitizations with appalling commissions attached, built into them. And Christopher Whalen has dubbed the credit default swaps as a yield to commission. The credit default swaps had such huge commissions built into them that the salesman from Wall Street had no choice but to go out and peddle them to all their buddies that they met in the Harvard Business School, etc. So the president ought to take a look at some of these the spreads that are built into these instruments to make sure that there is no next crash. And we can rest assured that they want the next crash. They want the volatility in the market. Because if they know when the markets are going to move, they can place leveraged bets and pay themselves over and over and over again.
And put the taxpayers on the hook for all the liabilities, because that is exactly what has happened with the two big-to-fail banks, the so-called too big to fail banks, and they threaten, well, we'll destroy the economy if you don't bail us out. Hey, that doesn't make any sense. Why in the world would we bail out the people who are destroying our economy? We're much better off to let them fail and get rid of them, and then maybe we'll have a decent economy again.
The listed futures and options market, the clearing firm has to pay the other side of the transaction. There's winners and losers, and it's dime for dime, penny for penny, mark to market. You've heard the term mark to market before. I actually taught the leadership of the exchanges about mark to market accounting. But the fact of the matter is, if the clearinghouse is the United States taxpayer, then you can make all sorts of bets, because and you don't even care if the bets pay off. You make these bets because you know it's a backstop by the taxpayer, as evidenced by Hank Paulson dropping to one knee and begging Nancy Pelosi for $787 billion. If that doesn't show you the system is rigged and corrupt, I don't know what does. But I can tell you that these credit default swaps were written, this is naked premium writing, they were written at AIG and Citibank, especially Citibank, by Thomas G. Maharis, at the instruction of then chairman Robert Rubin, who was Secretary of Treasury and partner in charge of arbitrage at Goldman Sachs. And so Goldman Sachs didn't want to write these credit default swaps. if they had Citibank and AIG do it for them, and then the Goldman Sachs securitizations were hedged, and the payoff came as the largesse, generosity of the captured regulators in Congress and the U.S. taxpayer. That sort of thing has to stop. And Mr. Trump is just, he's the man for the time. He's just the guy to stop the corruption.
Bob, tell our listeners very quickly, because we're out of time, tell our listeners very quickly where they should look for the information to verify what we've been talking about today. You mentioned the movie The Big Short. You mentioned several other movies. Tell our listeners where they can get this information.
Well, sit down with your whole family and watch Generation Zero, made by Steve Bannon. That's the movie that got Trump elected. That's one thing, The Big Short. Your friend and mine, Theodore Griffin, wrote a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. Also, we have a book called The Secrets of the Temple, written by William Grider. These people can't fleece you. They can't fool you. They can't scam you if you know what their game is. So when we had the crash of 87, all sorts of Wall Street rules went into play from the compliance department. You had the public was too smart. So now, conversely, most brokers in America are hand-tied by their compliance departments. They're not allowed to have opinions. They read from scripts.
Bob, the bottom line is educate, and learn and listen all you can. Thank you again for being our guest on this radio program, and I look forward to the next time.